I had nothing to do with the job. It was in the pharmaceutical industry. And he says, what's your purpose in life? And I just froze.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to executives and founders around the world, those that are disrupting and changing companies and industries, about what they see differently about identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, welcome. We're excited to have you. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for the support. Everybody, please subscribe to Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please rate the podcast. Today, we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by Lily Benjamin. Lily is an organization, change management, and talent executive who's worked for some of the biggest brands in the world. I'm so excited to talk to you. How are you, Lily?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Oz.
Of course. So I want to start here. I'm always interested about how people got their start, how they got into space. Because sometimes you find that people were at a very young age, knew what they wanted to do and super focused and got there. And then a lot of times people take non-linear paths to get to where they wanted to go. So let's say you've done it all, right? Talent management, optimization, M&A integration, org design, DEI. How did you first get into HR in the first place? Was this something that you intentionally did, or was it something you fell into?
So I am the example of your latter. You know, I was not a straight shooter. Me and my siblings are first generation of professionals in my family. So I just started as a cardiothoracic intensive care unit nurse. That's how I started my career. Just because I always loved people, was good in science and math, and that was the most practical thing to do. But it was as a nurse that I realized that there is a synergy between people and business. And that's where I discovered my passion for marrying the two. So then I started in corporate America in the brokerage industry. And I was already working on, I had finished my master's in organization development, because when I discovered that combination, it was when I fell in love with this profession. And so that's how I enter into human resources.
Wow. So you were in surgery, you were in like working with people's bodies, and then you decided that you wanted to move into HR. That's amazing. When you look at talent management, organizational optimization roles for a global matrix organization and what they do, I think that's going to be a little bit confusing for people who are listening to this, even people who are really well versed in HR. So help me understand, what is the scope of that type of role? You most recently did it at Amazon. What is the scope of that type of role, and help people understand what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, what you're in charge of?
Yeah. To explain my role, I want to start with the North Star. So the North Star is, why is the company here? Why are we doing business? So my role is more focused on the what and the how. So what do we do and how do we use it to then help the company exist? So breaking it down into three key pillars, like my job has to do with strategic alignment. It has to do with the employee cycle, life cycle, and it has to do with the organization effectiveness. So in terms of the strategic alignment, it's more around how do we align the needs of the talent that are going to actually support the movement towards the common goals, which is the business strategy. And then also thinking about the continuity of leadership and the business through succession. So that's the strategic alignment. So then when I go into the cluster of employee life cycle, this then has to do with how do we, first of all, do workforce planning? How do we hire? How do we develop? How do we retain and engage employees? So that's part of the work that I do with that cluster. And then the last one is organization effectiveness. So that one is a little bit more complicated and more unique of all. And I can break it down in five pillars for you. So one is design, organization design. This has to do with the structure, the processes. This is around processes efficiencies, technology. How do we use technology? Usually we think technology is just a tool that has all the answers, but technology is an enabler of strategy that helps us find efficiencies and innovation. So then how do we work with making sure that that's what technology does for us? And then the fourth pillar is the talent, and last but not least is culture. So that's what it means to all of us. So any health, any human resources professional can understand that alignment, employee, and organization effectiveness.
I really like that. So I want to go dive a little bit deeper into the org design aspect of it, but then also kind of the business impact aspect of it. Because what I see in some HR organizations is that they're doing things in absence of what the business objectives are, or not aligned with the strategy of the business. And I'm just very interested, from a very tactical perspective, what are the ways that organizations that want to more align their HR function with their business, what are some of the either the programs they can put in place? What are some of the ways that they can kind of align their organization? What are some of the things that you've seen be successful throughout your career to really make sure that HR is providing an impact on how the company generates revenue, how the company generates profit, and moves the company forward in terms of innovation and other business objectives?
Yeah, so what's very important is to have a clear understanding of what are those goals that have been set for the year, and then be present in those monthly reviews. Some organization has weekly reviews to make sure that are the actions that we're taking with the leaders and on the field, so to speak, are the ones that are aligned with that. Because sometimes there is so much motion in the business side and on the field side that we forget about the goals that are set. And that's where we have the misalignment. So those weekly reviews, bi-weekly reviews, however the cadence that you may have is, what's important is, are they aligned with what we said at the beginning of the year or at the beginning of the quarter? So that's very important. And usually what I tell my clients is like, have a placemat. And in this, Bank of America is really good about it, is that they have a placemat with that strategic vision and the goals and the strategic priorities for that part of the year that they're working with. And then at the beginning of every meeting or every discussion, they have that placemat present. So it's kind of like always orienting us. This is what we're doing, where we should be aiming our forces towards.
Got it. That makes total sense. So you've been involved in interviewing throughout your career, whether it be interviews you're going through or interviewing other people. Mm-hmm. You and I talked a little bit about thorough interview experiences and how your experiences there have really kind of shaped your approach on how you select and evaluate candidates for your team. So I'm just interested. Tell us about kind of some of the most thorough experiences you've been involved with, and then how that shaped the way you approach your interviews.
Absolutely. And I want to give a little bit of context of this, because interviewing is fascinating how it has evolved. Like in the 1900s, they used to hire people just based on their credentials and their educational background. But it was not until 1960s that they introduced psychological assessments. And then on the 70s that they introduced more structured interviews so that there was more consistencies. And it was not until the 80s that we started doing behavioral interviewing. Mm. And then in the 90s, then we introduced the element of competency-based interviewing. So now in the 2000s, we have the combination of the tools. And to your point, you have good practices, and then anything that is less than good or too good to be true, both of them had the same level of weakness. So on those very, very thorough interviews that they are over-engineered, they still have the same result of not being thorough at all. And that costs money, because like when you look at the studies, there is a direct correlation between the efficacy of the interviewing and the turnover retention rate. Okay. And so that correlation costs money. So it can cost 50 to 200% the salary of one employee.
Yeah.
So it's very important to find the sweet spot when we are doing when we are thinking about what is our correct interview process. So those that are very thorough, they usually, there's always a plus and a minus, and I always like to look for the plus. So the plus of those thorough interviews are very, very thorough, is that they actually start the onboarding process from the interviewing process. So it allows an insight of the culture of the organization for the interviewee from the very beginning. The other plus is that it allows us to reflect, us the interviewees, it allows us to reflect on our lessons learned from the past, because you're preparing on everything that they could probably ask you. And when they're very thorough, they actually even... they give you links for you to understand what is their interviewing process. So then what is the the negative consequence about that is that people come to you very scripted, right? So you don't get a very good sense of that person that you're interviewing because they're very well rehearsed, they're very scripted. And then on the other side, you find a person that is interviewing you that all he's doing is taking notes. So then you're not really exercising your high judgment during that exchange. And so then when you're left with words, so then when we look at the research, words are only 7 to 8% of the communication. So you're missing out on the tone, you're missing out on the nonverbal, because you're very focused on capturing the words. So do you see how the inefficiency starts trickling down and it makes that thorough process as ineffective as the one that is not thorough because of all those inconsistencies? So that's what I find. It brings a lot of anxiety for the person that is interviewing. I have heard a lot of talent that they quit in the during the process because they realize that this is already a reflection of the rigidity of a culture, right? Also, they may give you too many loops of interview. So then think about it as people make decisions in fractions of seconds, right? When you're shopping online, you pass, you pass, you pass, you stop, right? If you're dating, right, left. So whatever it is, you don't need too much. So if you need 8 and 10 loops of interview in one person, you should already say that's not the good one, right? So if you don't find like, you know, us is a good fit, I want to know more about us, then we have to be very centered on us, right? So we have to treat you as a customer so that we can keep you in the process. So these are the challenges that I find in those interviews that are very thorough. That is, they can demotivate the person. They can give hints of the culture in terms of, you know, I have to go through all of this to make a decision. So that's sort of like when I think about bringing it to dollars and cents, it's like, where is the sweet spot? Mm-hmm. And I have gone through interviews that they do a good job without mentioning names of companies, and that they are very clear on, you know, they keep you in the loop of what's happening. Sometimes the process of interview, it gets put on pause, and then the interviewees don't understand what's happening, right? But when that happens and they're constantly in communication with the interviewee, you know, that gives you a sense of, you know, relevance as an interviewee, and also gives you a sense of how communication is internally. And the other aspect of it is the structure, right? How many loops are necessary? And if so many people need to have an input on hiring a person, let's think about making a combination of one-on-ones, panel interviews, you know, experiential interviews where people can come with a case study, and just in time, you evaluate their, you know, do they think quickly on their feet and things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, this is an area that's near and dear to my heart. I don't know if we've talked about this, but literally the software that we've built is built around getting better hiring outcomes. And part of that is creating a structure and a standard that all managers can get the same output out of, right? But also understanding candidate experience and how you keep passive talent or really active talent in your process and engaged, so they actually get to the point where they get an offer and they accept it. And I totally agree with you. And one thing I would say, there's a couple different things that come to mind that as we were talking, because I have a lot of core philosophies when it comes to interviewing and what the right kind of standards are. You know, we coach and guide companies all the time on what is the best way to pull out requirements, and how do you know that you've been comprehensive with your requirements and you're really weighting them the right way? How are you making sure that you're aligning your questions and the right interviewers as part of that process to ensure that you're getting down to the actual, you know, real meat of what's important when you hire somebody or don't hire or make an offer, right? I'm a big believer in the rule of four in terms of that's how many interviews you should have. And you should mix up the interviews and put them in different scenarios, whether it be panel, whether they be at a restaurant, and getting the person out in different experiences and seeing and getting to be with them in different types of environments, more casual, more rigid, whatever it may be, so you can get a sense of them. And then I always tell people that, to me, there's a big rule around 80-20 throughout your interview process. 80% of the questions you ask should be standard among all candidates. 20% should be customized based on their unique experience and where they They may have something special or different or interesting about them. You have to have that in the interview process. But if you are constantly comparing oranges and apples throughout the entire process because you're asking different questions and having different requirements for everybody, you're never going to be able to make great structured decisions. And so I love what you said. The one thing that I would point out, though, is that there's a difference between thorough and length of time. Because I actually really believe that if you construct it properly, right? And again, there's technology and AI, there's different things you can do. You can be super thorough in a limited amount of time, right? You can be very diligent. What I find, so you have one of two types of people making mistakes in the interview process. Some are just so flippant and very much it's an art and come in, let's talk, and I'll shoot off the hip. And, you know, I know it when I see it. It's this black magic. I don't buy into that. And even if that is the case for you as an individual and you have a 100% hit rate, you certainly cannot systematize that and get other people on board with that. So if you're interviewing with anybody else or leaving interviewing to other people, good luck trying to get them to understand the world the way you see it. So that's one very far extreme. But the other extreme, and I see this all the time, is, well, we're going to put this person through the ringer. I want a behavioral assessment, a capability assessment. I want proof of work. I want references. I want them to come into the interview 10 times. They're going to have to come back and talk to me twice. And we're asking these people, and then they wonder why they're not getting the talent they want. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a false sense of, you know, when they say activity doesn't mean productivity. Mm-hmm. That's what I look at when I see people doing that. It's like, yeah, you're doing a lot of steps and yet you're actually getting diminishing returns on it because you're not being valued added in the steps. You're not being intentional in the steps and you're probably losing a lot of great talent because it's like, why am I going through this? Mm-hmm. I love what you said about onboarding during the interview. If you're going through that type of process, you're all of a sudden realizing right away, I need to get out of here because this culture, this company doesn't know what they're doing. And so I see it actually in a lot of, I see it in a lot of big companies, but I certainly see it with a lot of companies that want to have this idea of, oh, we're really discriminate when it comes into the talent we bring to the organization. My biggest advice for everybody out there is amount of time an interview spent does not equal better decision-making in an interview. Just as bad as one interview where you have a half hour call and hire, I also think a 20 interview process is just as bad. You can find that sweet spot. You agree?
Totally. This is exactly what I said. You know, we say in psychology, any strength overused is a weakness. So, you know, if you're going to go from not thorough to too thorough, the outcome is the same. You know, the outcome is the same. And it's just like, think about it. What is a good time to hire a person? Like, companies take 3, 4, 5 months, but then how long does it take them to onboard and be productive? At least 3 months. Right? Even if they're experienced because they need to navigate, especially if they're roles that are high pay, they need to navigate through complex organizations to build networks in order to be productive. And that takes time. So then think about it. If it took you 3 to 4 months plus 2 to 3 more, it's almost half a year or a little bit more. And like I said, it translates into money. You know, it's just all about money. So just, I think, like, if we think roughly speaking about, you know, entry people, middle level people, or senior people, like entry people, 1 or 2 loops of interview, it's good enough. And that shouldn't take you more than 2 weeks, right? And then if it's middle, then let's say 2 to 3 loops, or if it's bigger, so then it will be like up to 4 loops. I do like your rules of 4. I also don't believe in more than that. But I think, like, if you think, oh, well, we need all these key stakeholders' opinion, then bring them in a group. You know, have an hour instead of 30 minutes, have an hour, bring them in a group, divide and conquer. Say, I want you to focus on competencies of X, you on competencies of Y, and you on competencies of Z. And then have them ask those different interviews, those different questions. And as they're asking questions, they're also witness of the way in which the interviewee answers to the other questions. So it's efficient, you know, and I feel I love receiving and giving panel questions, you know, because you are with more than one person. It doesn't feel like so, it feels more like a dialogue. And if somebody's taking notes, it's not as disrupting to you as an interviewee, you know. And so So I think that there's so many ways to do it in a way that you get the best out of it without over-engineering it and without having the person to be too prescriptive, because they'll tell you what they want to hear, what you want to hear. You know, I believe everybody's smart, right? What we are not sometimes is wise.
Yeah, listen, there's people out there that are professional interviewers, and then when they actually get into the job, you're not getting the same thing. You're not getting the same person. I am such a nerd about this stuff. I could talk to you about it all day. I'm going to have you take a look at our software and talk about some of these things. One of the things that we built into it was transcription and video capability, so you don't have to be taking notes, and then actually getting AI to help be observant after the fact and call out things that you might have missed. And so what I believe is that automation, right, is not really the right way to go about interviewing. It's empowerment of AI and technology to help us make better decisions, right? But also allow for better rapport in the interview, allow us to focus on the person and still get all that key information we need to make great decisions. So I'm going to have you run through it. I want to get your advice. You obviously know a ton about this space. I'm so excited to talk to you about it. I want to take it in a little bit of a different direction, though, because another thing that is very important to you is culture. And you've worked at some of the biggest brands around, right? Avon, PVH, Bank of America, Amazon. I'm interested of all of those, right? When I ask you about the culture that best fit you, the one that you felt the best in, which one comes to mind, or which company comes to mind?
So all of them have an element that I will take. Ideally, in my experience, the best culture starts with leadership. It's about those leaders that are very relational and transformational. Why? Because you can have a conversation, you're seen as a person, and the second that you as an employee, you feel seen, you're more engaged. And then your creativity, your productivity, and your engagement is going to be shown on results. So usually it's companies that have that type of leaders that are also purpose-driven leaders. And I just want to just brag about one of them. I usually try to stay away from names, but Broadridge. When I went to Broadridge, it was amazing. We had strong leadership, just like the way I just shared with you. They're very people-centric. You know, they care about all people, not just the client, because a lot of organizations are outside and more focused on the external client, but of everyone. So I feel that companies that are very focused on people, on fact-based decisions, because when you are doing fact-based decisions, then you don't take things personally. And when you and I run into conflict, we can just like focus on the process and not on what you did or what you didn't do. So companies that do foster that type of environment that is fact-based, then we get to do sort of after-action reviews and sort of put out our stripes, right? Put our arms outside and then come and talk about what was the mission, what did we do, and then not necessarily go against each other. And then the other element, result-oriented. So to summarize it, strong leadership that's relational, that's purpose-driven, and then culture that is people-centric, fact-based decision, and that is result-oriented.
Ooh, what good stuff. Wow, I'm learning so much from this podcast, Lily. I'm so glad you gave me. I do want to talk a little bit. I know that you have some, and we already talked about interviewing a little bit, but I want to talk more broad-based talent acquisition, learn a little bit more about when you're hiring for yourself, what you're looking for. So let's start here. Core hiring philosophy. Do you have, when you're bringing somebody into your team, or maybe you're involved in a panel for another person that is interviewing for a role outside of your organization, but what is kind of your core hiring philosophy, the type of people that you want to bring into your organization?
So, you know, there are studies that show that we hire our image, right? So in that-
It's not always a good thing, is it?
It's never a good thing.
Okay, good.
It's never a good thing. So what's really interesting is that I am from another country, so there's not much of my image around. So that element gets a little bit elevated to a more objective side. And what's really interesting is that in companies that I am in, that I have large teams, usually they don't look alike. They're from different countries. So I tend to hire different as well, right? So if we hire our image, I hire different. But what do I look for? Because I have to go beyond that, you know, perhaps, I think, because I have to go beyond that membrane in terms of looking for who is like me. Then I focus more, I personally focus more on competency. You know, does that person has what it takes for this role? But I also don't hire so much on background. So my practice and purpose, I don't put so much focus on resumes. You know, the resumes get screened by a team before they get to me. So I try not to look at the resume, not to be biased. And I hire more on what can this person do. So I like to hire not just on what they can do, but what can they do in the future. So I like to hire on potential. And there's a lot of written about that, that when you're hiring for potential, then you have a more agile team. Because remember, none of us were prepared for the pandemic. So then the people that did best were the people that were those organizations and those cultures that were most agile. But a lot of businesses closed. You know, when there is the financial crisis, a lot of those businesses close. So we have, I think that focusing on the potential is as important. So then the next question is, how do we define potential? So potential is not just about cognitive ability, right? Like you and I would just say it before, it's not just intelligence, but it's also emotional intelligence. So I look for that. And what is emotional intelligence is about self-awareness. So through the questions, I am looking with a lens, how self-awareness and how well this person is sort of self-regulating to the questions that I'm giving, to any distraction that's happening, you know, to any inconveniences that have brought this conversation, that have brought us to this conversation. So that's the second point. So the next one is motivation. And even if you try to fake motivation, there are ways to sort of like dig in to see, because all of us are motivated because we all need a job, right? And we're also motivated by pay. But there's more that a person should be motivated by in order for me to feel this person has a long-term success in this organization. And that has to do with their long-term goals. You know, so questions that can point into, is this person looking to grow here? And even if they don't look to grow, because a lot of people have different needs and they just love the job they have. But if this person is looking to enrich himself or herself in the role that they have, that's motivation as well. Right. So then you look to see about their growth mindset. Is this person, you know, how motivated they are? The other one is resilience. So when we're looking at potential, you know, how resilient and how agile this person is. And last but not least is interpersonal relationships. So I look at those areas, not just intelligence, but emotional intelligence, motivation, agility, and perseverance and resilience, as well as interpersonal relations. So I focus a lot on that because I have had people that have said to me, this person was, she's a friend of mine now, but I won't mention her name. But she said to me, she was coming for a training to be a trainer. And she said to me that she couldn't train because if she starts training, she will stutter. And she was interviewing for that job. So she was
a trainer job.
She wasn't stuttering with me. So if I am anybody else, I would have disqualified her, right? But then I realized she's not stuttering with me. So she has created a narrative that justifies her anxiety towards the job that she's seeking. But that to me showed courage, right? So I think that if we don't look at the situation we have in front of us with judgment. And don't take me wrong, I have not always hired the right person.
We're going to come back to that in a little bit.
this story of success, like if I would have been stopped by the own crutches that she was putting in front of her, I would never hire her. And she became to be one of my biggest stars. And to the point that it's been over 15 years and now we're friends, even though we're in different companies. So yes, I think we have to see beyond the obvious to look more at potential and to be able to dig into not just what's in front of us, but what are we trying to accomplish? And then let go a little bit of our image, because if not, it's very comfortable to hire people that look just like you and think just like you.
I love that. Let's dig in a little bit deeper on maybe the either potential or motivation, because I think everybody wants those things, but they're not necessarily sure what questions in an interview to ask to determine it. What are some questions you might ask to determine either somebody's potential or motivation that might help somebody who's listening to this and wants some tips on how to interview better?
Sure. So motivation is usually, I like them, like, I usually like to ask questions about sort of, what do you want to be when you grow up, right? Just figuratively speaking. Like, I had a person say, I was interviewing her for, she was going to be my executive assistant, and she says, I want your job. That's a motivation. And guess what? While she was with me, she did finish her master's degree. Then eventually I moved into the other organization. But I assure you that she has gone to where she has wanted to because she was that motivated, unapologetically. And no manager should be intimidated by that. I want somebody that wants my job because I want a successor, you know? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of these interview settings, I love to hear when people say, I'm looking for a successor. That goes to show you that people are going to respect the acumen that you bring and not feel intimidated. So I feel that that is a question that is important to ask. What is your career? Like, what is your path? And whether it's in this company or not in this company, to ask it in a way that is not intimidating, because it could be intimidating that somebody says, What's your next step? And then people immediately going to say, if I say something else, they think I don't want this job. So it's good to position it in a way that it just helps you to sort of explore a little bit the aspirations and dreams of this person. So that's a way to explore about motivation. The other question around motivation is around
potential.
You
have another one for motivation. Okay, give me another one. Yes, please.
Okay, one last one for motivation. So motivation is like, when do they, you can ask questions about their hobbies, right? Like, when do you, what's the hobby that you like? And why do you like that hobby? Because usually those hobbies is a reflection of our intellectual curiosity and our engagement. So let's move to potential. So in terms of potential, it's about questions about what do they do that is also scalable, right? So asking questions around what you're in the context of what you're hiring them, but then asking them about how is that scalable? Have you scaled it? Or if you haven't scaled it, what are your thoughts about scaling it? So there you start digging into the areas of their critical thinking, on their ability to just be creative and think more laterally than just linear, you know, in a linear way. So those questions around scalability, you also want to ask questions about their readability. Are they ready for something else? You know, like questions around what other things do you like to mentor on? So then you start trying to get into their psychic about what else. So all the questions should be answered, or all the answers should be answering, what else can you do, right? To be more future looking. You can also be thinking about your own challenges, right? And without telling this person what are your challenges, you could say, if you had a scenario like such and such and such. So that there you could see their critical strategic thinking and the potential that they have to contribute. So without saying what are your challenges or what are current challenges of the organization, you can just put hypothetical scenarios that they can be helping you think through it. And you might think, well, is that behavioral? At this moment, we're not talking, remember, behavioral is that past behaviors have a strong prediction for future performance. Right. Sure. But in this case, we're looking at potential. So it's about a conversation about what's possible. So that's the kind of questions that I will just pose when we're talking about potential.
Oh, there's just so many nuggets of good information in here. I hope people are taking notes. If you're driving in the car and listening to the podcast, I pull over and I take some Apple notes real quick to make sure you get this. This is gold.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
Lily, what about a memorable interview experience? Bad, good, you don't have to name names, obviously, but when I ask you about a memorable interview experience, what comes to mind?
I'm going to give you one that probably it was transformational for me. I was in this company. I was as an external consultant and I wanted an internal job. And I am very thorough when I'm going to prepare for something. I over-prepare usually. And I prepared everything this person could ask me. And then when I sit there and we shake hands and we introduce each other, the first question that he asked me, and I'll never forget, is like, "So Lily, tell me, what's your purpose in life?" I wasn't a psychologist then. I had nothing to do with the job. It was in the pharmaceutical industry. And he says, "What's your purpose in life?" And I just froze. So I just froze. And I chose this one because it was transformational for me. I, of course, didn't get the job. Not because of that.
Wait, so what happened? I mean, you just sat there in silence the entire time? Did you have a segue?
No segue. I really wasn't prepared for that one. But the point is, eventually we got into the interview. But I came home asking everybody I knew, "Do you know your purpose in life?" And then I started having reflection, and now I know my purpose in life. My purpose in life is to build. I love building. I love taking something and contributing. Not necessarily all the time I'm the only one that makes it better, but I contribute to making it better. But I couldn't even say that then because I never had that self-reflection. So for the young listeners in this podcast, please think about those things, because good managers and good leaders are very purpose driven. And he clearly was one of those. He said, "What's my purpose in life?" You know, and believe it or not, you know, one of the things when you ask me about what's the culture that I like to work in, I started with a leader that is purpose driven. So this person that interviewed me taught me a huge lesson, transformed me, and helped me understand how important purpose is. But another good interview, it's been when I have had the hiring manager or the interviewer say to me, "You're interviewing me too." You know, that's so humbling. And it's very true. The interview is both sides, right? It's not just they are checking me out and seeing whether I am a good match, but I'm also checking, is this organization a good match for me? So that question, that statement to me, it felt so respectful, it felt so humble, and it felt so warm and inviting that immediately, you know, for whatever reason, if our shoulders are a little bit up because of the situation, they just drop down, you know, and then you feel like you're with a colleague that values your what's important to you as much as they are valuing you know. So that's sort of like a good one and one that taught me a big lesson in terms of my own experience. Yeah.
Those are great stories. What about, we talked a little bit earlier about sometimes you miss, everybody misses. When you miss, is there a theme you can look back on that you wish you would have done differently, or something that you had to mature and learn from because you made that mistake multiple times?
Yeah, I can remember one when I first started in my career, and it was pressure. The theme was pressure. So when I started my career in corporate America, I was asked to do a lot with very little because we were, you know, in the middle of a lot going on. And so then I felt rushed to hire. The good thing is that I had a very supportive boss, and he did not like nail me against the wall, and he sort of understood. But then I was so embarrassed to realize that I did it in a hurry. And that I just felt like, you know, just hiring somebody to get this done, that was the right thing to do. So I will say to the leaders that are listening to this podcast, is just go with the motto of slow down to go fast later. So it doesn't matter how much pressure you have to fill in that position. It doesn't mean that you have to take forever, right? Have a clear process. Oz and I have been already talking about, you know, when too much is not necessarily good, but have a clear process that it's not going to take forever, or that it's not going to be so thorough that you're going to miss out on the opportunity. But just take your time to be objective, right? And hire a decision based on objectivity rather in the pressure that you're on to fill that position.
Love that. All right, I want to take it in a little bit of a direction, different direction. I want to learn a little bit more about you and some of the things that are important to you. So I know right now you're in between opportunities. I'm interested on how you're spending your time, how you're getting fulfillment, how you're getting, is there anything you're learning about yourself? Is there anything, like, tell me what's going on right now? What are you working on right now that you're very excited about?
So this is an opportunity, right? So sometimes we go into, I always say there's no music without pauses, right? Mm. Because the pauses between the notes, that silence between the notes is what creates music. Otherwise, ooh, we have a cacophony, right? If all the instruments go play without stopping, it's a cacophony. So I feel this is kind of my music. And I have been in touch. I've been very busy in the process, but I'm also consulting. And I am also dedicating time to a passion I have, which is veterans. I have a tremendous passion for veterans. As I shared with you in the beginning of the podcast, I used to be a cardiothoracic intensive care unit nurse, and I worked for the veteran hospital. So I used to work with veterans, and I know their how difficult is their life when they are the most vulnerable, because we're all at our most vulnerable when we're sick. So then... So now my passion is, how do I extend the legacy of those that I have passed, but that still have lessons for our modern leaders? So if you check my LinkedIn, every week I write about one of our most honored veterans and what lessons do they have for leaders today. So I have, even though they have passed, some of them centuries ago, but I want them to stay alive in our lives, teaching us the courage that it took to go and fight for our country and put themselves in harm, but still with their character and their resilience, they still taught us so much lessons. So that's one area that I have been passionate about. And while I am in transition, I'm dedicating time. And also I'm collaborating with a former professor in working on a special project that doesn't have legs yet, but it's going to be about supporting veterans to have better access to their health resources. So that's the music I'm creating now between, you know, generating my income, looking for my next home, and at the same time, passionate about veterans.
Well, I'm so glad I asked you that. There are so many good things that came with that. The pauses with the music, the fact that you're giving back, and because of your where you started your career, I'm noticing on your LinkedIn now, these different posts, you do it weekly. What a fantastic thing. I have so much admiration for you. And yes, what an underserved area that needs a spotlight that we can bring a shine onto. So I would recommend everybody goes and checks out Lily Benjamin's LinkedIn page and see some of the things and go and engage with her posts. That is fantastic stuff. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
What about a great book you've read recently, or maybe some great content you've consumed recently that you'd recommend to our listeners?
I am very nerdy. So maybe what I've been reading lately is not necessarily related to this conversation, but I am reading this book that's called El Norte. It's in English, but it's called El Norte. And it has to do with the times of colonizations of the Americas. And in specific, speaks a lot of the colonization of the Caribbean. And, you know, I'm from Puerto Rico, I'm from the Caribbean. So that was what first attracted me to it, because our culture is very different, and every culture is very different. But the culture in the Caribbean, we kind of gave those colonizers a different type of hard times that others gave them. And it just filled me with pride. So that's what I'm reading. So in terms of how do I apply this to this topic, it would be about the resilience of my culture, of my people, and that women were as important, you know, even on those times. They used to be caciques, that means presidents and prime ministers, before they were colonized. And we have towns in Puerto Rico that are named after some of those women. So then just to me, it's just about that, you know, that leadership comes in every culture, comes up in every culture, in every gender. It's just about us inspiring others, being clear about the direction that we're moving, and then inspiring and enabling others. So I always tell my clients when I coach them, and I say to them, you as the leader have just three responsibilities. Number one is set direction. Number two is seek alignment. And number three is motivate people. That's how easy is their jobs. Actually, it's not, but really those three cannot be forgotten about a leader's responsibility, which is set direction, seek alignment, and rally people around that, right? Because we hire smart people. We just have to allow them to then bring their intelligence. I always say to them, they are CEOs in their own households, right? So when they walk through those doors of our organization, they cannot leave their critical thinking, their strategic thinking behind just because they have one strike less than me, than my, mine in my shoulder. So it's like, we want to tap into that collective intelligence. So that's the book that I've been reading lately. Then I recently heard this podcast that's called, I think it's called The Brain, something about the brain, that it was fascinating, that it also talked a lot about resilience and leadership. Let me see.
We can put it in the show notes. So, but listen, okay. I got to tell you, I mean, I didn't know you were listening to any other podcast but Higher Learning. You're cheating on me by listening to other podcasts. Come on, what's going
no,
on?
No, no, really? No. I good one, no, I actually was listening to yours too after I met you. I started listening.
I'm joking.
No,
I'm
but I'm
joking.
Serious because, you know, we were coming here and I actually, you know, I'm fascinated about all the podcasts that exist because I'm a biker. So in the summer,
so you put it in
I listen
bike.
To podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'm always welcoming podcasts. And so when Roxanne told me about you, then I started listening to yours and I found them fascinating. And something that I like about the work that you do, Oz, is that discussion that you were just having before, which is about using technology so that you're more present with the individual, and then you can have a better sense of who you're recruiting. So I think that's something that is not necessarily done by everybody, and I think it's the best practice that if I were to design one today, I would like to emulate that practice that you have because—
I'm telling you, I'm gonna get your feedback on this, and I think it's one of the things we miss out the most, and I think you really called it out on why. I know somebody, and I try to do this in our own interview processes and say, this is a 50-50 interview. We are interviewing you, yeah. But the other 50%, you are interviewing us. Mm-hmm. And what I think gets lost a lot of the time in this, you know, a lot of ways that interviews are structured and set up is this, as if assuming you want to work here and now you're going to go through our mm-hmm. process, come hell or high water, and jump over these big hoops to take our fantastic job and come work. But that is not actually how it works. Yes, being diligent and getting to the details of the fit of the person with your team, with your dynamic, with your objectives, with the role and the capacity. That's important. There's mm-hmm. no question about that. You know what else is important? Creating a great candidate experience and attracting people who are of high talent, who have options, who maybe weren't looking for any other work, and showing them why coming and being a part of your vision and part of your organization is going to help them get the things they want out of their career individually. And so I think that's such an underserved aspect. And that's why with the technology, not only was it about giving you more intelligent data, information, and best practices to make better decisions, but also making it seamless, handless, you know, timeless from a perspective of being able to build a rapport. And this is why I'm so adamantly against technology that automates or replaces humans in the talent acquisition process. I've seen this one company, I keep seeing their ads, and I don't know if it's just, you know, I'm getting targeted or what, but it's this AI avatar, right, that's coming and asking questions as if it's me in their questions maybe I would have asked. And it's like, I can't even imagine that. Can you imagine if this was an AI podcast and we just had two AI avatars talking to each other? Imagine going to work for somebody that you've never met. You talk to their AI avatar. I hate that. This is a human-centered process mm-hmm. that shouldn't be automated. Technology should enhance the human experience mm-hmm. when it comes to interviews. And that's how you create a candidate experience where people want to come and join your vision. And I just think that's such an underserved aspect and understanding of how you create a great interview process and hiring experience overall. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you agree.
Absolutely. This is why when you asked me my, you know, remembering and a good experience, I remember that one when she asked me, you're interviewing me too. You know, it felt so human. I felt so welcome. And I never gonna forget them because I felt like, oh my God, you know, that's such a great experience. So yeah.
I love it, Lily. I know I'm gonna come up to New York with Roxanne. We're gonna get together. We're just gonna be in the corner talking about interviews for like 6 hours. And everyone's gonna be like, hey, can you guys like relax on talking about interview best practices? Hey, listen, we're passionate. Passion and purpose. That's what it comes down to. All right, I got one last question for you, and then we're going to go into lightning round.
You got it.
Nate, tell me some advice that you'd give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now.
Wow. I would say at my 20-year-old, I lived life, you know, when I think about 20, I was still in Puerto Rico, you know. So I would say to my 20-year-old to set clear goals, even if you change them later. And to be okay. And to
Was that something that you think that you lacked at the time? Did you not have a lot of definition about where you wanted to go? And do you think that that kind of slowed your progress?
I don't think it slowed my progress, but it's probably, I probably not have been able to understand my blessings as well. I have been very blessed, you know, and then sometimes I look back and then I said, oh my God, but it was in front of me, but it was in front of me. But if I had more clarity of where I wanted to go, maybe I would have seized that moment. But I think, you know, everything happens for a reason, but I really, if I were to tell myself, what could I do better? It would have been about setting goals. Like I said in the beginning, me and my siblings are the first generation of professionals in my family. So I didn't have much guidance. So I give myself a little bit of grace on that. So, you know, I have learned as I've been doing. I feel sometimes I'm writing the book a page at a time. But that would be the advice. I think it's important to have goals and to be okay changing them. That you don't have to just hold on to them, but they give you a sense of direction.
Yeah, what I try to do with goal setting is I set something very far off, right? And then understand that the way I get there, right, might be deviated, and I have to be open to that. And what I want to try to do is build systems that help me eventually get to those goals. But it is important to have a North Star, right? To have something. And I think sometimes it can be actually a little bit detrimental to have maybe a 1 year goal or 2 year goal, because then you get too focused and too narrow. And then so the journey is very important, but understanding where you're trying to go and how you're going to be fulfilled and what matters to you and what's important to you. And then getting on that road and pursuing it, but being open to the different ways the road can take you, I think is very, very key. So I think that's great
advice.
I think
flexibility is very important. You need to build flexibility when you're setting goals, personally and business-wise.
Sure. Great advice. All right, we're at our lightning round, and we're going to go Puerto Rico lightning round. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask these questions. I want you to tell me the first answer that comes to the top of your head, okay? Favorite Puerto Rican cuisine?
Arroz con gandules.
Well,
arroz con gandules is a dish that's made mostly in Christmas, and that is with a special kind of green peas, and it has a lot of blessings and love. So that's my favorite cuisine, arroz con gandules.
Who is your favorite Puerto Rican celebrity?
I love Marc Anthony. Marc Anthony.
Have you seen him in concert?
Oh, yes. And he's an incredible entertainer and just so genuine. It's just like you want to hug him.
I love that about him, too. I agree. He's a completely authentic person, and you can feel it in his voice and in his singing. I think that's a great answer.
And he's so loyal to our culture. And even though he wasn't born in Puerto Rico, but he feels like he was born there. He's just such a beautiful icon for us.
I love that. Now tell us, if somebody was visiting Puerto Rico, where would you send them?
I would send them to Guanica.
What's Guanica?
Guanica is a place that has beautiful beaches. I think it's towards the south. It has beautiful beaches, and then it has delicious cuisine, very ethnic cuisines, and it has a lot of history, a lot of caves. It's just a beautiful place, and it takes you away from San Juan. San Juan is beautiful, but it's very civilized in the center of the cult in the country. You see more culture, and it's more authentic. So Guanica.
I love that. What is something about Puerto Rican culture that, if you weren't in it, you wouldn't know, or maybe dispel a myth or something? Just tell me something about Puerto Rican culture that maybe our average listener wouldn't know.
We are very welcoming of foreigners. We love people from other places. We're very also tolerant to different beliefs. And so therefore, when you come to visit us, you always feel like home. The other day I saw in the internet a woman that is living there, but she's from the United States. And she said that she was carrying her children and she had a bag for shopping bag. And she went to open her cart and somebody went to open it for her. And so we are very, yeah, you will think that scary here, but
it doesn't happen in New York, does it?
No. But over there, they see a mom with children or a woman that's pregnant and people go and they go to help them. So it's a very service center culture. And so and we're very blessed.
I'm on Expedia.com right now. I'm checking out how much tickets to Guanica are going to be. So I will let you know what I think. Lily, I really appreciate you coming on. This was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. Looking forward to meeting in person at some point. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and for bringing this conversation to flow.
You got it.